The Realms in Exile, The Northern Line. Eriador, Arnor, and the Heirs of Isildur. Eriador was of old the name of all the lands between the Misty Mountains and the Blue. In the south it was bounded by the Grey Flood and the Glanduin, that flows into it above Tharbad. At its greatest, Arnor included all Eriador, except the regions beyond the Lune, and the lands east of Greyflood and Loudwater, in which lay Rivendell and Hollin. Beyond the Lune was Elvish country, green and quiet, where no men dwelt. But dwarves dwelt, and still dwelt, in the east side of the Blue Mountains, especially in those parts south of the Gulf of Lune, where they have mines that are still in use. For this reason they were accustomed to pass east along the Great Road, as they had done for long years before we came to the Shire. At the Grey Havens dwelt Círdan the shipwright, and some say he dwells there still, until the last ship set sail into the west. In the days of the kings, most of the High Elves that still lingered in Middle-earth dwelt with Círdan, or in the seaward lands of Lindon. If any now remain, they are few. The North Kingdom and the Dúnedain. After Elendil and Isildur, there were 8 High Kings of Arnor. After Iarendur, owing to dissensions among his sons, their realm was divided into 3. Arthedain, Rúdar, and Cardolan. Arthedain was in the northwest, and included the land between Brandywine and Lune, and also the land north of the Great Road as far as the Weather Hills. Rúdar was in the northeast and lay between the Ettenmoors, the Weather Hills, and the Misty Mountains, but included also the angle between the Hallwell and the Loudwater. Cardolan was in the south, its bounds being the Brandywine, the Grey Flood, and the Great Road. In Arthedain, the line of Isildur was maintained and endured, but the line soon perished in Cardolan and Rúdar. There was often strife between the kingdoms, which hastened the waning of the Dúnedain. The chief matter of debate was the possession of the Weather Hills and the land westward towards Bree. Both Rúdar and Cardolan desired to possess Armansúl, Weathertop, which stood on the borders of their realms. For the Tower of Armansúl held the chief Palantir of the north, and the other two were both in the keeping of Arthedain. It was in the beginning of the reign of Malvegil of Arthedain that evil came to Arnor. For at that time the realm of Angmar rose in the north beyond the Ettenmoors. Its lands lay on both sides of the mountains, and there were gathered many evil men, and orcs, and other fell creatures. The lord of that land was known as the Witch King, but it was not known until later that he was indeed the chief of the Ringwraiths, who came north with the purpose of destroying the Dúnedain in Arnor, seeing hope in their disunion, while Gondor was strong. In the days of Argileb, son of Malvegil, since no descendants of Isildur remained in the other kingdoms, the kings of Arthedain again claimed the lordship of all Arnor. The claim was resisted by Rúdar. There the Dúnedain were few, and power had been seized by an evil lord of the hillmen, who was in secret league with Angmar. Argileb therefore fortified the Weather Hills, but he was slain in battle with Rúdar and Angmar. Arveleg, son of Argileb, with the help of Cardolan and Lindon, drove back his enemies from the hills, and for many years Arthedain and Cardolan held in force a frontier along the Weather Hills, the Great Road, and the Lower Hallwell. It is said that at this time Rivendell was besieged. A great host came out of Angmar in 1409, and crossing the river entered Cardolan and surrounded Weathertop. The Dúnedain were defeated, and Arveleg was slain. The Tower of Armansúl was burned and razed, but the Palantir was saved and carried back in retreat to Fornost. Rúdar was occupied by evil men subject to Angmar, and the Dúnedain that remained there were slain or fled west. Cardolan was ravaged. Arafor, son of Arveleg, was not yet full grown, But he was valiant, and with aid from Círdan he had repelled the enemy from Fornost and the North Downs. A remnant of the faithful among the Dúnadain of Cardolan also held out in Tairn Gorthad. The Barrow Downs, or took refuge in the forest behind. It is said that Angmar was for a time subdued by the elven folk coming from Lindon and from Rivendell, for Elrond brought help over the mountains out of Lorien. It was at this time that the Stours, that had dwelt in the Angle, between Horwell and Loudwater, fled west and south, because of the wars and the dread of Angmar, and because the land and clime of Eriador, especially in the east, worsened and became unfriendly. Some returned to Wilderland, and dwelt beside the Glatton, becoming a riverside people of fishers. In the days of Argaleb too, the plague came into Eriador from the southeast, and most of the people of Cardolan perished, especially in Minhiriath. The hobbits and all other people suffered greatly, but the plague lessened as it passed northwards, and the northern parts of Arthedain were less affected. It was at this time that an end came of the Dúnadain of Cardolan, and evil spirits out of Angmar and Rúdar entered into the deserted mounds and dwelt there. It is said that the mounds of Tairn Gorthad, as the Barrow Downs were called of old, are very ancient, and that many were built in the days of the old world of the First Age by the forefathers of the Edain, before they crossed the Blue Mountains into Beleriand, of which Lindon is all that now remains. Those hills were therefore revered by the Dúnadain after their return, and there many of their lords and kings were buried. Some say that the mound in which the Ring-Bearer was imprisoned had been the grave of the last prince of Cardolan, who fell in the war of 1409. In 1974 the power of Angmar arose again, and the Witch-King came down upon Arthedain before winter was ended. He captured Fornost, and drove most of the remaining Dúnadain over the Lún. Among them were the sons of the king. But King Arvedui held out upon the North Downs until the last, and then fled north with some of his guard, and they escaped by the swiftness of their horses. For a while Arvedui hid in the tunnels of the old dwarf mines near the far end of the mountains, but he was driven at last by hunger to seek the help of the Lossoth, the snowmen of Forchel. These are a strange, unfriendly people, remnant of the Faradwaith, men of far-off days, accustomed to the bitter colds of the realm of Morgoth. Indeed, those colds still linger in that region, though they lie hardly more than 100 leagues north of the Shire. The Lossoth house in the snow, and it is said that they can run on the ice with bones on their feet, and have carts without wheels. They live, mostly, inaccessible to their enemies, on the great cape of Forchel that shuts off to the northwest the immense bay of that name. But they often camp on the south shores of the bay at the feet of the mountains. Some of these Arvedui found encamped by the seashore, but they did not help the king willingly, for he had nothing to offer them save a few jewels which they did not value, and they were afraid of the Witch-King, who, they said, could make frost or thaw at his will. But partly out of pity for the gaunt king and his men, and partly out of fear of their weapons, they gave them a little food and built for them snow huts. There Arvedui was forced to wait, hoping for help from the south, for his horses had perished. When Círdan heard from Arnath, son of Arvedui, of the king's flight to the north, he at once sent a ship to Forchel to seek for him. The ship came there at last after many days, because of contrary winds, and the mariners saw from afar the little fire of driftwood which the lost men contrived to keep alight. But the winter was long in loosing its grip that year, and though it was then March, the ice was only beginning to break, and lay far out from the shore. When the snowmen saw the ship, they were amazed and afraid, for they had seen no such ship on the sea within their memories. But they had become now more friendly, and they drew the king and those that survived of his company out over the ice in their sliding carts as far as they dared. In this way a boat from the ship was able to reach them. But the snowmen were uneasy, for they said that they smelled danger in the wind. And the chief of the Losoth said to Arvedwe, "Do not mount on this sea monster. If they have them, let the seamen bring us food and other things that we need, and you may stay here till the Witch King goes home. For in summer his power wanes, but now his breath is deadly, and his cold arm is long." But Arvedwe did not take his counsel. He thanked him, and at parting gave him his ring, saying, "This is a thing of worth beyond your reckoning, for its ancientry alone. It has no power, save the esteem in which those hold it who love my house. It will not help you, but if ever you are in need, my kin will ransom it with great store of all that you desire." In this way the ring of the house of Isildur was saved, for it was afterwards ransomed by the Dúnedain. It is said that it was none other than the ring which Felagund of Nargothrond gave to Barahir, and Beren recovered at great peril. Yet the counsel of the Losoth was good, by chance or by foresight, for the ship had not reached the open sea when a great storm of wind arose, and came with blinding snow out of the north, and it drove the ship back upon the ice, and piled ice up against it. Even the mariners of Círdan were helpless, and in the night the ice crushed the hull, and the ship foundered. So perished Arvedwë, last king, and with him the Palantiri were buried in the sea. These were the stones of Annúminas and Armonsul. The only stone left in the north was the one in the tower of Emin Beraid, that looks towards the Gulf of Lún. That was guarded by the elves, and though we never knew it, it remained there until Círdan put it aboard Elrond's ship when he left. But we are told that it was unlike the others, and not in accord with them. It looked only to the sea. Elendil set it there, so that he could look back with straight sight, and see Eressëa in the vanished west. But the bent seas below covered Númenor for ever. It was long afterwards that news of the shipwreck of Forachel was learned from the snowmen. The Shire folk survived. The war swept over them, and most of them fled into hiding. To the help of the king they sent some archers, who never returned, and others went also to the battle in which Angmar was overthrown, of which more is said in the annals of the south. Afterwards, in the peace that followed, the Shire folk ruled themselves and prospered. They chose a thane to take the place of the king, and were content, though for a long time many still looked for the return of the king. But at last that hope was forgotten, and remained only in the saying, "When the king comes back," used of some good that could not be achieved, or of some evil that could not be amended. The first Shire thane was one Bakka of the Marish, from whom the old Bucks claimed descent. He became thane in 379 of our reckoning. After Arvedwë, the North Kingdom ended, for the Dúnedain were now few, and all the peoples of Eriador diminished. Yet the line of the kings was continued by the chieftains of the Dúnedain, of whom Arranoth, son of Arvedwë, was the first. Arahel, his son, was fostered in Rivendell, and so were all the sons of the chieftains after him. And there also were kept the heirlooms of their house, the ring of Barahir, the shards of Narsil, the star of Elendil, and the scepter of Annúminas. The scepter was the chief mark of royalty in Númenor, the king tells us, and that was also so in Arnor, whose kings wore no crown, but bore a single white gem. The Elendilmere, star of Elendil, bound on their brows with a silver fillet. In speaking of a crown, Bilbo no doubt referred to Gondor. He seems to have become well acquainted with matters concerning Aragorn's line. The scepter of Númenor is said to have perished with Ar Pharazôn, that of Anuminus, was the silver rod of the lords of Andunie, and is now perhaps the most ancient work of men's hands preserved in Middle-earth. It was already more than 5,000 years old when Elrond surrendered it to Aragorn. The crown of Gondor was derived from the form of a Numenorean war helm. In the beginning, it was indeed a plain helm, and it is said to have been the one that Isildur wore in the Battle of Dagolad, for the helm of Anarion was crushed by the stone cast from Barad-dûr that slew him. But in the days of Altanatar, Alcarin, this was replaced by the jewelled helm that was used in the crowning of Aragorn. When the kingdom ended, the Dúnedain passed into the shadows, and became a secret and wandering people, and their deeds and labours were seldom sung or recorded. Little now is remembered of them since Elrond departed. Although even before the watchful peace ended, evil things again began to attack Eriador, or to invade it secretly, the chieftains, for the most part, lived out their long lives. Aragorn the First, it is said, was slain by wolves, which ever after remained a peril in Eriador, and are not yet ended. In the days of Arahad the First, the orcs, who had, as later appeared, long been secretly occupying strongholds in the Misty Mountains, so as to bar all the passes into Eriador, suddenly revealed themselves. In 2509, Celebrion, wife of Elrond, was journeying to Lorien when she was waylaid in the Redhorn Pass, and her escort being scattered by the sudden assault of the orcs, she was seized and carried off. She was pursued and rescued by Eladan and Elrohir, but not before she had suffered torment and had received a poisoned wound. She was brought back to Imladris, and though healed in body by Elrond, lost all delight in Middle-earth, and the next year went to the havens and passed over sea. And later in the days of Araswil, orcs, multiplying again in the Misty Mountains, began to ravage the lands, and the Dúnedain and the sons of Elrond fought with them. It was at this time that a large band came so far west as to enter the Shire, and were driven off by Bandobras Tuk. There were 15 chieftains, before the 16th and last was born, Aragorn the Second, who became again king of both Gondor and Arnor. Our king, we call him. And when he comes north to his house, in the Numinas restored, and stays for a while by Lake Evendim, then everyone in the Shire is glad. But he does not enter this land and binds himself by the law that he has made, that none of the big people shall pass its borders. But he rides often with many fair people to the great bridge, and there he welcomes his friends, and any others who wish to see him, and some ride away with him, and stay in his house as long as they have a mind. Thane Peregrine has been there many times, and so has Master Samwise the Mare. His daughter, Eleanor the Fair, is one of the maids of Queen Evenstar. It was the pride and wonder of the Northern Line that, though their power departed and their people dwindled, through all the many generations the succession was unbroken from father to son. Also, though the length of the lives of the Dúnedain grew ever less in Middle-earth, after the ending of their kings the waning was swifter in Gondor, and many of the chieftains of the north still lived to twice the age of men, and far beyond the days of even the oldest amongst us. Aragorn, indeed, lived to be 190 years old, longer than any of his line since King Arvegil, but in Aragorn Alessar the dignity of the kings of old was renewed.